And welcome back to the show that you've all been waiting for, the show that is sweeping the nation by storm, and that is, woo, fantasy.
Woo!
That, of course, is my co-host, Nick Heffley. Nick, been a busy few days. NFL draft finally wrapped up yesterday. How are we feeling there?
This almost had to become my full-time job to be able to go over all these guys that have been picked over here the last couple of days. Wow. Sixth and seventh round seem to last longer than it has in any other draft that I can remember. Wow, but there's a ton of guys to talk about over here.
Yeah, there's quite a few things to hit on, speak about a little bit, and names that are floating out there, names that went to fantasy-relevant places, also some names that had a chance to have some fantasy relevance, but then fall into the laps of teams that probably are not going to provide much excitement anytime soon. But that is the
at least
way
for
that,
a couple of years.
Yeah, that's the way the cookie crumbles when it comes to the NFL draft. Though, team draft wise, though, do you got any teams that you felt did well better than any others out there? What's your take there?
I do. I think the Broncos had a really good draft. Draft where they were drafting, I think they've got a lot of guys on offense and defense that had a chance to really do something. I think my Bears had a really good draft too. I think they let the draft come to them, traded up and got a guy I know that you're high on, Anthony Miller, there in the second round. So those are just a couple of my favorite ones out there. What about you?
I agree with Broncos. I think they did really well with some of the pickups that they had. I think the Royce Freeman pick has a lot of potential, whether it be for NFL and also for fantasy purposes. But also, I mean, getting Cortland Sutton and getting Deshaun Hamilton, we'll kind of touch on them a little bit more as we go along. But, yeah, they did a pretty good job hitting their spots in the draft, so to speak. But I liked what the Packers did. The Packers really kind of honed in on defense and got players that seemed to kind of fall to them. Really important position players, whether it be the two cornerbacks that they selected early, and then even, you know, getting a guy like a Josie Jewell awfully late in the draft as well. I thought that was a really, really solid drafting when it came down to it for the Packers. But failing teams, you got any that you felt just they couldn't get out of their own way? You were scratching their head and what they were trying to do.
I have no idea what the hell the Seahawks are doing. You've got a team that you cannot run the ball, and Russell Wilson is out there running around like a chicken with his head cut off, and you take Rashad Penny in the first round. Now, I like Rashad Penny. You like Rashad Penny, but you know, you trade back. I think you could have traded back again and maybe got somebody there. But, you know, the Seahawks are sitting out there. I think they should have been a team you should be trading up and go getting an offensive lineman out there. So you got a team that, I mean, it's clear what you need to do, and you go out and you get a running back? That doesn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. The Seahawks kind of had some question marks in the draft, even though I think Penny
– I like Penny.
Penny still has a chance to be – pretty special. I think they could have made a selection there at the end of that first round and then potentially tried to move up into the second round somewhere to go after and get Penny if that's your guy. I think that's probably where they kind of failed. The Chiefs had a horrible draft, in my opinion. They did not address anything on the offensive side of the ball, so they kind of feel like they've got all the pieces set there. But even still, on the
I think you've got – but, B, you got to – You got to include Pat Mahomes as part of this deal, though, because, I mean, they wouldn't have got Pat Mahomes. I mean, you at least got to put a little Pat Mahomes on this draft here. Same thing like with the Niners and Jimmy Garoppolo here. You got to put at least a little bit on that, because guess what? You wouldn't have had him otherwise. You didn't use your first-round draft pick as collateral to go up and get a guy. So, but let's just face it. Outside of that, what the heck are they trying to do? Turning a defensive tackle into a guard?
Yeah. That makes no sense whatsoever. I guess Khalil McKenzie, it felt he wasn't getting the job done at Tennessee as a defensive tackle, so he thinks that his body mass alone will be able to make the transition to guard in the NFL. I just, it's, there's no, there's probably not a good chance. There's not a chance that he really makes that roster, I think, out of training camp. So Khalil McKenzie might be a guy that they move on from at the end of training. He'll probably be one of the later cuts, I would say, at the end of
McKenzie's
the
McKenzie's a huge guy to, I think the Chiefs can find some kind of role for him. Heck, who knows? They might turn him into a fullback at this rate.
You never know with the Chiefs. That is
what, who is your team that you thought had a little left out there that you're trying to figure out their direction?
I mean, that's the Chiefs were one of the main ones for sure. You know, the Buffalo Bills are another one. You know, I know they traded up to get Josh Allen there in the first round, but even after that selection was made, a lot of questionable moves on their part. I couldn't really put my finger on what they were trying to accomplish throughout this draft. Your first two picks of Josh Allen, sure, maybe, hopefully that'll pan out. I still have my question marks when it comes to his potential, especially in Buffalo. But, of course, you get Tremaine Edwards as well. But outside of that, it's just a lot of reaching for players and hoping that they pan out, I think, is what they wound up doing. A lot of focus on the defensive side of the ball. But then towards the end, they go with a couple wide receivers there at the end that I don't think will be anything more than special teams players on that roster. Yeah. So,
yeah. I'll say that for them, though. The Harrison Smith pick out of Stanford there, I think it was round three, I thought it was a great pick. Harrison Phillips. I'm Harrison Smith, Vikings.
Yeah.
Harrison Phillips out of Stanford. No, I thought that was a great pick. I mean, it seems like, great to put next to Kyle Williams there and have him, you know, teach him a little bit. I thought that was a great pick. So.
But anyways, outside of that team, the team grade wise, what we're here to do, of course, is to discuss fantasy football implications, and that is what we're going to do here on this show. We're going to talk about a lot of these players that are when it kind of came off the board in that second round and on. And kind of like what we've talked about a little bit off air before we started here, quarterback wise, not a lot of to write home about when it came to the quarterbacks that came off the board this weekend. Of course, we talked about Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph is going to be the heir apparent to Big Ben in Pittsburgh. So likely to see limited time on the field over the next 2 to 3 years, but whenever Ben is making that decision to finally hang it up, Mason Rudolph is a guy that he immediately steps into the discussion as a quarterback one. So, I mean, if you're in a dynasty format, if you want to go ahead and pull the trigger this year, but you have the roster space to let him sit for a year or two, you know, by all means, do it late in the dynasty draft. But don't have any expectations that Mason Rudolph is going to be anything more than just a bench spot filler for the next couple of years. What do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little disappointed here on some of the guys and where they went. I mean, Mason Rudolph, I was, pretty high on outside of Baker Mayfield. I thought if he went to, a Saints, that would have been a great spot for him to go land. There's a couple of situations where, heck, I was hoping that Mason Rudolph would go to, maybe the Patriots out there, but maybe – Tom Brady would be a little too butthurt if he had somebody of Mason Rudolph's ilk right behind him there. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed. One of those two situations didn't get a quarterback. Maybe even there were the Chargers there, but some of the other bigger quarterbacks. Cowboys got Mike White there. Luke Falk goes to the Titans, where there's not necessarily even a guy in a dynasty league to be able to take him. I mean, these guys are going to be 4 or 5 years away from starting there. So it was, for me, it was a little disappointing outside of the round one guys on anybody having any fantasy relevance anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and think about it, all three of those quarterbacks from that 2003 draft class, whether it be Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, or Phillip Rivers, are all right there towards the tail end of their NFL careers. And as it stands right now, Big Ben is probably the only one that has an heir apparent set and ready to go in place. I mean, I know the Giants hope that one of the two, Davis Webb or Kyle Laletta that they drafted this weekend, can pan out and become that guy. But and then if you look at the Chargers, I mean, Phillip Rivers, they're going to ride that guy until his wheels fall off is what it sounds like. It's just,
or until he has too many kids where,
Say, yeah, I mean, he's working on kid number 8 or 9, it feels like, at this point right now. So at some point or another.
Woo! Kids.
I would think that Mrs. Rivers would get tired of doing all the work at home and demand that her husband come home and fulfill some responsibility. So,
Gee. What are they up to, about 15, 20 kids now?
I think he's trying to work on fielding his own pro baseball team. I think that's the I think that Philip that's Philip Rivers' goal is he wants to start his own father son's softball team. That's what I think that's what the goal is.
And moving business.
And
Rivers and Sons.
Rivers and Sons. Yes, that is. You got to have a post NFL career choice, and that might be his. So, as far as quarterback wise, that's about all there is to write home about. Like you mentioned with Mason Rudolph, there was a chance. There were a lot of folks pointing out the fact that the Patriots might have taken a shot at him at the end of round one. They didn't. So your automatic assumption was that Rudolph was going to go some point in round two, and he did not. He winds up sitting there all the way until let's see, what pick was it in round three that he went off the board? Round three, pick 76 overall to the Steelers. That's for
I
a
thought it
guy.
was way too far.
Yeah, for
I
a guy
mean,
that they were talking
unless.
about being 31 to go fall down to 76, it's pretty steep decline there.
Yeah, I had him going in round one in our little predict the pick there on NFL.com. I had him as a round one guy, and for him to fall all the way to round three, I thought it was a little shocking, especially for some of these teams that, could use a quarterback like Mason Rudolph. So I was a little shocked.
Yeah, my initial landing spot for him was going to wind up being the Arizona Cardinals in round two, but the way that
Maybe that would
draft,
have been a better move for the Cardinals there instead of going up all that draft capital to go up and get Josh Rosen.
that's something that they're going to have to discuss over the next few years. But I think they're happy with the choice that they made. The way their draft shook out, I think, and even with the free agency moves that they made in the offseason, they're going to be ready to kind of turn the corner pretty quickly, I think. You'd give them probably this year to stink it up again, and hopefully, so a few more free agency moves next year. They might be ready to kind of get back into the game a little bit, I think, especially with Rosen at quarterback. I think there's a little bit of a bright future there in Arizona with the guys that they've brought in. So, moving on from quarterback, going into the running backs, it was a busy Friday night for sure for some of these running backs that came off the board. Of course, you got Nick Chubb was the first one that got his name called, going to the Cleveland Browns at pick 35 overall. So a guy like Carlos Hyde, who was celebrating the fact that the Browns did not go get Saquon Barkley on Thursday, was quickly reminded how easily you're replaced in the NFL when the Browns go and get Nick Chubb. So, what's your initial reaction on Nick Chubb? Yeah, how do you think he will pan out this year?
I think for this year, my expectations are tempered just a little bit. I think Nick Chubb is a good running back. Now, how much he's actually going to see the field over Carlos Hyde, over Duke Johnson. I think to me, it reminds me a lot of the Saints situation last year. I think Nick Chubb in the end is probably the second most talented back. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Carlos Hyde had a good year last year with the Niners. When he was healthy, he did pretty good. So you got a halfway decent line there with the Browns. You got a halfway decent offense. But let's face it, Nick Chubb is going to get some time in that offense there too.
Yeah, I think some of the initial projections that I've seen for him so far has been just a shade over 700 yards with six rushing touchdowns in year one. So I think that might be, for me, that might be a little bit lofty. Like you said, Carlos Hyde is a fairly productive back whenever he's healthy, but that's always the knock on Carlos Hyde is the time that he misses on the field. He's always has the potential to score double-digit touchdowns, is Carlos Hyde. And I think if you give him enough time in that offense, I think he can kind of do that again this year. But the way this Browns coaching staff, I think they're shaking things out. They're going to want to spread the wealth. And you're going to see that full-blown committee backfield this year in Cleveland with both Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb. And then, of course, you can't forget Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson will be the pass
Can't forget
catching
Duke
back.
Johnson. Yeah, I mean, I think Chubb in drafts, I mean, you're probably looking at, let's say, what, about around 10 to 12 running back in redrafts leagues. Dynasty leagues, I mean, I'm thinking tail end of round one, early round two kind of guy. I mean, that's just kind of where, you know, I think he's going to go there. I mean, he's definitely got a lot more long-term potential than he does this year. You know, I think there's other guys there that have a little bit more of a clear path, a little better offense than obviously the Browns have right now.
Yeah, I think Nick Chubb will be a guy that just depends on how the preseason starts to look for him. It's going to greatly change his potential draft spot when it comes to the drafts in August and when we get to that point. So, yeah, I mean, generally you're not really going to Cleveland for fantasy production out of the running back spot, so going to a guy that's splitting time in that backfield, I wouldn't suggest it unless that value just becomes too much to the point where you feel like you're going to have to take the risk on the player. So Nick Chubb, not getting Chubb for Nick Chubb over here, definitely. So, So another guy coming off the board in round two, probably one of the guys that's easily going to go ahead of Nick Chubb in some drafts is Ronald Jones the second. Goes to the Buccaneers, pick 38 in the second round. Ronald Jones going to be taking over for Doug Martin down in Tampa Bay. How are you feeling about his outlook?
I am really liking Ronald Jones' outlook here. You know, looking there, I mean, the only person he has to beat out right now is Jaquizz Rodgers. Jones is clearly the most talented back in this backfield. You know, looking at overall at the guys who've taken the running back position, I mean, the only guy I even see amongst these rookies here that is going to be better this year than Ronald Jones is Saquon Barkley. Jones, I think, can have a better year than Rashad Penny. He's in a better offensive situation, at least for him, than Penny, which I know you like Penny. I think Penny's probably third right behind him. But, you know, Jones is going to be featured, I think, in the Buccaneers' offense, and he has a little better line to be able to run behind. So I see actually really good things for Ronald Jones. To me, he is, let's see, I would say in dynasty format, probably the number two guy right behind Saquon Barkley. I think in redraft leagues, we're probably looking at, I'd say right now, maybe around five kind of guy with, obviously, we know how rookie running backs like to move there. He could be sneaking into round four here by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah, if he's going to be the bell cow back of this offense, you're going to definitely see him kind of sneak into that round four and redrafts for sure, just for the expected workload that he can bring you. I think his, from what I saw earlier, the initial projection on him is just shy of 1,000 yards and four touchdowns on the ground. So
I think it's a little light on the touchdown.
Maybe a little light on the touchdowns on the ground, but you have to think too, you know, Jameis Winston and Mike Evans and the tight ends that they have in this offense are probably a little bit more dangerous in the red zone than what they can do in the running game. So I think they become a little bit more pass heavy when you get into that scoring area. So you know, 4 to 5 touchdowns, I would definitely see that. I could expect that out of him this year for sure. But I think the PFF Pro Football Focus scoring on Ronald Jones had him, he graded out this past season, graded out higher than any running back in any class of any season in their college career. So he had a very, very stout season last year in 2017. So there's going to be a lot of expectations when it comes to Ronald Jones and what he can do there in Tampa. And I mean, that's the classic case of a guy falling into the right spot at the right time in the draft. So definitely expect some good things with Ronald Jones this upcoming year. Just on workload alone, that's something you always want to see out of a guy that you've got, which potentially is going to be a running back too. He's going to get that heavy workload. He's going to be involved in both the running and the passing game. So dual threat player. Definitely has a high ceiling when it comes to a potential points scored. Outside of that, round two, you have the absolute free fall of Darius Geis falling all the way to pick 59 overall to the Washington Redskins. Of course, me as a Cowboys fan, I'm not happy about this fall into their lap. I think that's a potential dangerous landing spot for a player that is as good as Darius Geis. So he's in line to have a pretty solid year this year. What about you? What are you thinking on Darius Geis?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the one reason Darius Geis fell is apparently there's some things out there that we don't know about that shied some teams away. So, I mean, obviously, I think we'll know a little bit more about what's going to happen with Darius Geis here by the time that drafts kick in August. But I'm a little nervous on the news and kind of what's going on there, at least at this point. But, you know, until we have something solid, I mean, I think Darius Geis is, you know, his potential is a little limited there with Chris Thompson being such a good receiving back in that offense there. But Darius Geis definitely has some potential.
Initially, he's going to have to beat out Samaje Perine, but with a guy that's that talented, I don't think that's going to be an issue there. So he immediately falls.
Perine had a good year though last year.
He had a good year, but a lot of his
volume
based. It's they fed him the ball enough to get the stats. He's not a guy that's going to separate himself from tacklers or anything like that. So, I mean, whereas Darius Geis can really create his own yardage after contact. So I think they're going to want to go with a more explosive player on first and second down, and then, like as you pointed out, yield the field to Chris Thompson on third down for the catches and open the field a little bit more. So I do like Geis where he landed. He's probably going to be looking at running back 3 type numbers from him this year, but that's steadily going to increase over the course of the next 2 to 3 years. Definitely think you're going to be looking at a running back 1 by, if not by the end of year 2, definitely into year 3. I think that talent there alone is going to be one that you can't shy away from. So, as far as landing spot wise in drafts right now, you're probably going to be looking at him around that 8 to 10 spot in drafts, I would say, as we stand right now. Just because of Perine being there still, so you don't know how this offense is shaking out. So you're gonna have to give it time to see how the chips fall. But initially, I definitely say that Geis is gonna be the player to own in that backfield, without a doubt. And that's even with Chris Thompson back there. I think Geis can show a little bit of a upside when it comes to receiving the ball, something you didn't see much in college. I think he can showcase that on the pro level too. So. Definitely a steal for the Redskins there at that late in the second round.
Yeah, and I think dynasty wise, Geis is probably a top 5 pick. Let's face it. Dynasty formats, I mean, running backs are certainly, key. Running backs, wide receivers are the people who are going to go highest, in these dynasty formats. And I mean, while the wide receivers, there's a couple who landed in really good spots. Let's face it, it might be 1 through 5 might all be running backs. I think some of these guys have landed in that good of a situation for their future. I think for me, Darius Geis is certainly a top 5 dynasty format running back this season.
Yeah, I definitely think the rookie drafts are going to be very, very running back heavy early on, just because, we've mentioned it before how the receiving class itself was kind of not very star-studded. So many of these guys were just a mixed bag. And even with the quarterbacks, I mean, most of these quarterbacks landed in situations that aren't going to be fantasy prevalent right off the bat. So you're going to have to go with guys that are going to give you an immediate impact, and most of those are going to be running backs this year compared to the other 2 or 3 positions that we talk about. So, yeah,
100%.
With that. So another guy that came off the board in the second round that was a bit of a head scratcher for me is Kerryon Johnson to the Detroit Lions, pick 43. I don't get the selection. Like I was telling Nick during the draft when it was playing out, it doesn't make sense to me because of the fact that you have LeGarrette Blount there already, a proven NFL player, a proven running back that can get the job done on the ground, pass protection, whatever you want him to do, he can get that done. And you draft a guy like Kerryon Johnson, which we've seen at Auburn, is essentially the same player. But that bruising type back that really kind of can hit a second gear when he gets into the open field, much just like LeGarrette Blount can. So It was a very redundant pick for me for the Detroit Lions in the second round. I know they feel like they want to get another running back to open up the kind of get this backfield a little more depth, but yeah, Kerryon Johnson was probably not the guy that I would have gotten if I was them. You probably could have waited another round or two and gotten a guy that would probably be better suited for your team.
Yeah, I think the Kerryon Johnson pick was the only reason for me. It was a head scratcher. I think he was predicted to go in the third or fourth round, and he was gotten by the Lions in the second round. But I think the Lions are just simply tired of having shit running backs on their team. They haven't. When's the last time they had a 100-yard rusher? Like, I don't even remember the last time.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. And even on top of that, a 1,000-yard rusher. When's the last time they had one of those?
No idea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, LeGarrette Blount, that's great that he's coming in and that he can kind of do everything. But, you know, he's got a lot of tread on those tires. So he's not going to be around forever. Amir Abdullah has been an absolute injury bust all the time. Theoretic is nothing more than basically a poor man's Duke Johnson. They do not have a guy that is going to go out there week to week that they're going to count on. And at least according to the Lions, they think Kerryon Johnson could be that guy. I think for me going to this team, I don't know how it's going to shake out year one. I at least am intrigued by Kerryon Johnson, and you know, as your RB4, RB5, I think you could do a lot worse because you could have a guy that could have come up and be the number one. Dynasty wise, I think you know he's probably you know in that 6, 7, 8, 9 discussion there in dynasty drafts and in round one there, but. You know, I just don't know. I don't know how well he's going to do year one, but I'm at least, again, I'm intrigued by the upside here.
Yeah. There's some upside there for sure. Definitely just because of you know, where he landed, you know, what's LeGarrette Blount's role going to be past this season. But and for me this year alone in redrafts, Matt Patricia has dealt with LeGarrette Blount before. I don't see how they don't just hand the ball to LeGarrette Blount constantly, week to week in this offense. I think Matt Patricia is going to try to bring more of that mentality of beat teams up on offensive and defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, LeGarrette Blount's the perfect type of player to do that with. And, you know, Kerryon Johnson can be that player, you know, years 2, 3, 4, and on. I think it's something that they drafted thinking far ahead instead of drafting a team that's going to try to be in contention this year. So it's just – that was the confusing part for me. I think they could have done a little bit better at that spot, whether it be at another position or what. I don't think Kerryon Johnson was the fit right there in round two. So some other
– I think he could have been had a little bit later.
Could have had another – later, at least another round later, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
I think they kind of jumped. It's one of those situations where you know, the team likes a guy and they just decide to jump on him because they fear that he won't be there when their next pick comes up. So that's probably the situation that happened here. So other running backs to talk about. Next one to come off the board was in round three, and I think this is probably going to be the guy that's going to have some heavy-duty potential in fantasy football leagues this year, and that's Royce Freeman. Falling to the Broncos in round three at pick 71 overall. All he has to do is beat out Devontae Booker, and Devontae Booker's shown in chances that he's been given the opportunity to take the job and run with it. He's simply failed. So I think if Royce Freeman comes in and shows a lot in training camp, earns more reps, that he could definitely be the guy that takes over this running game and definitely another one of these dual-threat running backs can do it on both sides of the ball. So I do like this pick of Royce Freeman here.
Yeah, let's not forget about D'Angelo Henderson there as well. I mean, I personally think Devontae Booker is going to have a good year this next year. I think Royce Freeman will basically take on the role D'Angelo Henderson had in that offense last year. I think Henderson comes up as the number two. Royce Freeman is, for me anyway, a number three kind of guy. I don't necessarily see the value for Freeman like you do. But I think this is going to be Devontae's job, and I think he had a couple of good games last year. But then again, he never really got the volume because C.J. Anderson was there. But for me anyway, again, I think Devontae Booker is going to be the guy this year. I don't think Freeman's going to have much of a role.
That's where we differ. I definitely think Freeman's probably going to wind up taking over that job and running with it myself. If not early on in the season, probably going to be definitely midway point on when we're in that fantasy stretch run towards the playoffs. So keep in mind, Royce Freeman, I would definitely have a path to Royce Freeman in my starting lineup as we get into the fantasy playoff time, because I think he can be a player that can kind of help carry you to wins late in the year. Definitely feel confident in that fact as we stand right now. So, other running backs, kind of going down the list here. Next guy off the board was Nyheim Hines to the Colts, pick 104. Are we feeling any kind of fantasy relevance with Nyheim Hines on the Colts roster?
I mean, I think for me, it's similar to Royce Freeman there. I mean, I think there's a guy, Marlon Mack, who showed some things last year enough for me to at least think he's going to get the majority of carries going forward. But let's face it, I mean, Marlon Mack is not going to be a bell cow guy to where I think Nyheim Hines is going to at least come in and get some carries in there in offense. But at the same time, I'm not banking on a lot for this year. Mack had a good enough year last year for me to at least, you know, drink that double M Kool-Aid there in Indy.
Yeah, kind of same scenario with Nyheim Hines. I think you're looking at, between him and Marlon Mack, you're looking at both players that aren't suited to be heavy dosage running backs in the NFL. So I think they're going to kind of feed off of each other, with Marlon Mack getting probably more like 2/3 of the work in the offense. Marlon Mack will be the player to own in that backfield for sure. Nyheim Hines just kind of gives them a little bit more insurance in case something happens to a Marlon Mack. But you know, I've said it all weekend long too. Indianapolis's backfield, the way it shakes out right now, just screams to be a landing spot for a DeMarco Murray or a C.J. Anderson veteran type presence in that backfield. So,
100%.
Yeah, I don't. I would be shocked to see them go into Week One with Marlon Mack as the starter. I fully expect for them to add DeMarco Murray. That's my choice right now. I think it'll be DeMarco Murray will be the running back of this team. Definitely, I'm putting my stamp on that right now. And that's something that I told Jake Seeley from Roto Experts as well over the weekend. We were talking about some things that I told him that I felt DeMarco Murray was going to be the guy in Indianapolis. So watch out for that one moving forward. But outside of that, you got any other running backs that you think have any potential fantasy relevance that were drafted later on in this draft?
You know, there's a couple of names that are out there that I are not going to have relevance for me, at least year one or year two even. I think just because of the situations that they got drafted in. Mark Walton going to the Bengals, he's going to be behind a couple of guys there to where I don't think he's going to have any potential. Unfortunately, he could have gone to some situations where I would have said, yeah, you know, he's going to at least factor in year one. I know a favorite of yours and mine, John Kelly, went to the Rams. He's going to be behind Todd Gurley. We're not going to see him on the field there that often. And then actually Bo Scarborough that went to the Cowboys there, I don't think he's going to have any relevance. But the one guy that was drafted there after Nyheim Hines that I think may hold a little bit of fantasy relevance for teams this year, Kalen Ballage that went to the Dolphins. Frank, you got an age Frank Gore over there. You got Kenyon Drake, who did have a good year last year. However, Ballage has got a little bit more potential, I think, long term than Kenyon Drake. So for me, he'd probably be a late round, probably number five, number six kind of running back guy who may later on in the year get some looks there. So that's the one guy I think, you know, draft a little bit later that I'm taking a look at. What about you?
You kind of hit the nail on the head for me with John Kelly for sure. Both he and Mark Walton were guys that I was hoping would fall into more friendly situations for them, so that way they could show their skill set off and have a potential shot at a job, move up the depth chart quickly. Neither one are in line for carries in the situations that they both landed in. You know, Mark Walton in Cincinnati's behind both Joe Mixon and Gio Bernard, and both of those players are signed to rather cheap deals over the course of the next few years. So that's, you know, team control on those guys for at such a cheap price. I don't see Mark Walton finding any time on the field anytime soon. Kind of similar situation with John Kelly, though. I mean, that's a guy that I was likening to could be another Alvin Kamara this year if he was to land it in a friendly spot, like I just said. But good, being behind Todd Gurley on that Rams team, it's not going to work out. John Kelly will be a guy that's going to play behind Todd Gurley over the next few years, and he'll probably have to be a player that's going to find another destination to find any fantasy relevance whatsoever. So I hate it for the guy because I think he's got tons of talent, but like what I keep saying, that's the way the cookie crumbles in the NFL draft. Players land in positions where you hate it, players land in positions where you absolutely love it, and both of those two guys landed somewhere that I did not like. Kalen Ballage, like you mentioned, I think he's going to have more of a passing down role probably even this year with the Dolphins. It's definitely going to be the Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore show in that offense. But if one of them were to go down, then you have a little bit of kind of bump in potential productivity out of a guy like Ballage, much like Kenyon Drake last year. Once they made the trade of Jay Ajayi, and once he was gone, Kenyon Drake took off with that job and ran with it. So I expect to see something similar out of him again this year. So
yeah, I think he's a late round flyer here. Dynasty format, you're probably looking at early to mid round two kind of a guy there with some upside potential.
Yeah, I can agree with that there. But outside of that, I mean, there's really day three, especially
not a lot of
running back potential on day three. Where last year, you got into day three and you got guys like Kareem Hunt that came off the board, and you got your Jamal Williams that came off the board, guys that some of us expected to be able to come in and do damage early on, and then that's what they did. You're not going to see that a lot with some of these players this year out of the 2018 NFL draft. So it's definitely top heavy when it came to the running back position in rounds 1 through 3, the first 2 days of the draft. So those are the guys to keep an eye on in your redraft leagues, in your dynasty rookie drafts. So of course, these will be guys we'll kind of talk about a little bit later on as we get in the summer months, get training camp started up, see how some of these position battles start to shake out, how things look. But
a lot of things can happen.
Running back, yeah, a lot of things can happen. There's always injuries, always moving parts, whether it be cuts by teams, injuries in the preseason. There's always something that can happen to get a guy into a more valuable position, so to speak. So moving on to the wide receivers, right off the bat,
yeah
it was round two, you saw a few guys coming off the board. Of course, Cortland Sutton going to the Broncos in round two, that was probably the biggest one, pick 40 going to the Broncos. A guy that was rumored to be going to Dallas in round one, we wound up letting him go after round one, going to the Broncos in round two. How are you feeling about his prospects for the Broncos?
For this year, not good. He's behind two historically big producers in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, if something were to happen to one of those two guys, Sutton, I think, is in line for a good year. But, Sutton and then another guy that the Broncos took a little later that had some big production in college. Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State. He's got the chance. Those two here in a couple of years have a good chance to be a really good 1-2 punch for the Broncos. But I don't think it's happening here this year. Sutton may be a late round, number 7 wide receiver kind of guy, very very late round pick. But I don't see it happening for this year. Dynasty format, I think he's probably, out of the guys that have been drafted, probably top 3, top 4 out of the guys that were drafted there, but I'm not getting that warm and fuzzy feeling for this year.
Yeah, there's very limited potential for Cortland Sutton this year when it comes to a seasonal redraft league, for sure. But staying on the Broncos, like what you mentioned with Deshaun Hamilton, the way the two picks came off the board, to me, both of those two receivers are pretty much carbon copies of the two receivers that they could likely replace in this offense over the course of the next year or two. So, you know, Courtland Sutton plays a very similar type of receiver to a Demaryius Thomas. And Deshaun Hamilton is very, very similar in his skill sets as far as excellent route running to an Emmanuel Sanders. So, you know, both of those two elder receivers both have walk options after this next year. So the Broncos could let, you know, one of those two receivers go, could let both of them go, depending on how they feel the progression of both of the young receivers are playing out. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them, you know, completely move on from both. You know, both will be over 30 years old after this next season as well. So depends on how the Broncos team is in general.
Yeah, I think it depends on how they shake out, depending on if they're going to bring back one, both, or let both of them walk. So they're either going to be really good with that defense, and the defense is going to show up, or Case Keenum is going to suck, and they're going to tear the thing down a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. But definitely long-term potential with these two guys when it comes to dynasty formats, for sure. I could see these guys going on second, third-round type of selections. For sure, when it comes to your fantasy leagues. So moving on from them, of course, then you have a guy, Dante Pettis, going to the San Francisco 49ers at pick 44. How are you feeling about a Dante Pettis in this new offense with Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback?
Basically the same guy as Marquise Goodwin, isn't it?
He's exactly the same. That's exactly what I thought when they selected the guy.
I mean, that would have been a great spot for Courtland Sutton, Christian Kirk, some of these other receivers to be able to go. Michael Gallup, that would have been a great spot for these guys to go, because there would have been a tall receiver out there catching passes. He drafts somebody that's a deep threat just like Marquise Goodwin. So disappointed. I don't see the long-term potential for Dante Pettis. I really don't. I'm not going to be drafting him. I'm not going to be touching him. Draft wise, I mean, he's probably gonna be a late round flyer. I'm just not excited about it.
Yeah, I'm not excited whatsoever. I think the 49ers are a team that's probably gonna be on the verge of looking for another veteran receiver to bring in to add to this offense with Marquise Goodwin or Pierre Garçon. I think Dante Pettis, his only value that he could probably provide this year would be as a special teams player, punt returner, kick returner.
How many points you get for special teams there, B?
How do you get for special teams there? 6 points.
I don't know.
6 points per touchdown.
Yeah, you can count on that every week, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying that's the only type of value that he's bringing in general. So, I mean, if you're looking for
that's what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
We're trying to tell you don't worry about drafting this guy.
But he could be a late round flyer. I mean, if you feel confident with how your roster is constructed and you want to take a chance on a rookie and see if things shake out, Dante Pettis would be a guy that you can pick up in, like, say, the 20th round of your draft and see how things look after the first 2 to 3 weeks, and then you cut him and move on and find someone else. I mean, that's just how things go. That's the smart way to do things. That's for sure.
I think there's a lot of other better names you can call out.
There's definitely better names to call out, but if you're in a position where, can't everyone be able to land on a player in every single round or every single draft? Sometimes you got to take those long shots and hope that they pay off. It's just where you got to prepare yourself either way. That's what we're trying to kind of point out here.
Not everybody can be Nick Hafley. Hit on long draft picks that just come to fruition and win you a championship. They all can't be me.
I'll give you more of a pass when it comes to the receiver position. Whereas I definitely hold the mantle of a guy that can pick out a running back like nobody else's business. I would have to give me that.
How many titles, be?
Yeah, we're
moving on.
We're not here to talk there about that. That's for sure. Moving on to the Anthony Miller selection to the Chicago Bears. What, like, exactly like what Nick already mentioned. Anthony Miller was a pre-draft favorite of mine. I was for sure hoping he would go to Dallas. I felt he was going to be the receiver we would need to put in this offense.
Guys had a chance.
We had a chance to take him, decided to pass it up. So, you know, that's how things shake out, like we keep saying.
One pick later, the Bears took him.
Yeah.
One pick after you guys got Connor Williams, another offensive lineman.
But you could have
had somebody.
But what I will point out, though, is that that offensive lineman was such a value at that spot at a position that we felt we needed to improve at. I'm okay with the selection there. That is for sure. It gives us more flexibility on that offensive line because, like what I keep telling you through these podcasts, we're going to be a run-first, run-heavy team. You're going to have to get back to the way of having that dominating offensive line that we had just as early as 2 years ago to have any chance to compete. I mean, you've already kind of set the wheels in motion for that. You might as well buy in and just keep at it at this point now. But anyways, Anthony Miller, yes, going to the Chicago Bears. I like the player. I'm kind of iffy on the landing spot right now, and it all ties in to Mitchell Trubisky. What do we see out of Mitchell Trubisky in year two? Do we see Jared Goff, Carson Wentz from 2017, or do we see a guy that still can't figure it out and is just an absolute bust of an NFL quarterback? So that, for me, is a big tale.
It should be. You know, everything that I hear coming out of, you know, pre-draft workouts, you know, everything that they've done with Nagy in this offense with Trubisky, Nagy is literally building an offense for Mitch Trubisky. Every move they make, every guy that they go get, I say that to say, I don't think he's going to have the kind of impact that Wentz and Goff had. I don't think it's going to be far off either. So Allen Robinson, I think, is going to have a great year. I mean, this offense is going to be a bounce-back offense. You got Allen Robinson, you got Kevin White, you got two big guys, and then you got Anthony Miller, who they have likened to an Antonio Brown, to a Steve Smith. He's the kind of guy that has that potential there. Taylor Gabriel is an okay wide receiver, but he's not the kind of receiver Anthony Miller is. Anthony Miller's great. I love this pick. Love this pick here. Anthony Miller is one of these guys that, granted, he's not going to go early, but when we get down to, you know, round 14, round 15, it's not going to be an absolute late-round guy, but he's going to be a guy I'd probably want as my number six. He's going to catch some passes in that offense there. I like it. I like this pick. So Nagy moved up, gave away a second-round pick last year to the Pats to be able to get this guy. That's how bad he wanted him. I don't think he does that for a guy that he's planning on sitting on the bench.
Yeah. I mean, Anthony Miller will – just like what he did in Memphis, he was a walk-on that worked his way into a starting role and became one of the best receivers in the nation. I think he'll wind up working his way into the lineup for the Chicago Bears and, you know, finding a spot to where he demands targets each and every week. That's no bones about it there. I like the pick, but I hate the pick at the same time just for Mitchell Trubisky. The question marks that surround him, because, you know, I like what you were just saying as far as, like, every move that they make, every step that they take, I'll be watching true.
We'll be watching Anthony Miller catch passes from Mitch Trubisky.
That's the hope for sure. I think more of the touchdowns in this offense, though, are going to probably go the way of Allen Robinson and Trey Burton, so... I'm not going to sign on just yet for Anthony Miller being a huge scoring threat this year. I think if he gets five touchdowns, that's a huge victory for y'all this year.
That's good. And I mean, he's going to be a guy, I think, in this offense that's going to get, you know, five, six targets a game, which I think is great. I mean, you know, White and Allen Robinson are going to be going down the field and catching balls, but I think, you know, you're going to get some deep passes. I think they're going to kind of work him in to having some short routes. Anthony Miller is going to – I'm telling you, you like him and I like him both for a reason. I mean, if you're listening, this is a guy you should be targeting later in your drafts that has some big upside in this offense.
Yeah, which, I mean, like I said, I agree with to an extent. It's just all depends on what Mitchell Trubisky can do in his own right. As we've seen over the last few years when it comes to rookie wideouts coming into the league, ever since that Odell Beckham draft class with those big heavy hitters that came out of that draft class, it's just been hit or miss with a lot of these receivers, and I think you're going to see a lot with this class too. So there might be weeks, you know, where you're going to get double-digit points scored out of a receiver, but then they disappear for weeks on end as well. So I definitely see the case being made there with Anthony Miller this year as well in that offense. So I could be wrong. You know, this could be the LA Rams offense of 2017 to what they're trying to build in Chicago. It all is on the shoulders of Mitchell Trubisky. You know, I keep having a point.
Trubisky had some good games last year. But don't forget, Trubisky had some good. He had some bad games too.
He had plenty of bad.
He had some good games. Yeah,
he had good games when it come to like touchdowns scored, but he was not a very heavy threat in the passing yardage. So
who did the same thing? What quarterbacks did the exact same thing 2 years ago?
Derek Carr was
great touchdown game. Great touchdown games, but absolutely just, you know, couldn't put it together week to week. Late round draft picks that somehow managed. Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, the exact same situation there. Again, yeah, I don't think Mitch Trubisky is going to have, you know, a top 10 year this next year, but he's a fantasy backup that I would love to have on my team, be able to wait and pass up the Eli Mannings and the Phillip Rivers of the world to get a Mitch Trubisky late. So dropping in some non rookie relevant fantasy stuff right there.
Yeah, I mean, hope you all mix it up a little bit. That's for sure. You got to keep everyone informed. It's like what I keep saying on Twitter when I put out these episodes is that we're here to educate people and help people win, and that is definitely what the goal is for this show. Woo, fantasy. Moving on.
Speaking about a weird number, now I'm gonna jump around here real quick. Since we're talking about a Bears receiver, we gotta talk about the top receiver of the Cowboys then real quick, Michael Gallup. What's your thoughts on Michael Gallup?
I like the Michael Gallup selection based on the value in which we got him. Picking him where we picked him, I think is a better value for what we would have done had we gotten a Sutton in round one or gone after like a James Washington in round two or something like that. Gallup, I think he rated out as the number two receiver in this draft class on Pro Fantasy Focus, or Pro Football Focus.
At least early on, he was the number one, I thought.
He fluctuated all year long, but he was in the discussion. That's one thing. So I do like the landing spot for Michael Gallup, but yeah, if we're here to talk fantasy, yeah, that's the biggest thing. And is his potential as a fantasy threat in 2017 going to be high? No, not whatsoever. It's like what I've already said once before in this episode. We're going to be a run heavy, run first, run all the time team. The opportunities are going to be very, very limited for a guy like Michael Gallup because even still right now, alone where he stands in the depth chart at receiver, he's behind Allen Hurns. He's behind Terrence Williams. He's behind Cole Beasley playing out of the slot. And you're going to have to think that potentially a tight end is going to get more targets than he will in this offense. Now, whether that's Jason Witten, who we're still trying to talk out of retirement, be the guy, or Rico Gathers, then you're going to have to factor in Zeke Elliott getting catches and the newly acquired Tavon Austin being a pass catching running back in this offense. So there's not a clear path for Michael Gallup to enough opportunities to be worth anything in fantasy this year. He's going to be a guy that you're going to hold in dynasty alone and maybe hope that some injuries shake out and he has value this year, but He's going to be year 2-3 guy. He's going to be a guy that's going to give you a little bit more value as we get into years 2 and 3 for him in this offense.
You know, maybe it's me drinking the pro PFF Kool-Aid. I think you're nuts. I am thinking Michael Gallup is going to be galloping up and down the field for the Cowboys. I think Michael Gallup is going to have a good year. Who is he really beating out in this offense? Really? Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley,
Deontay Thompson, Allen Hurns. So again, I think Allen Hurns is going to have a good year, but I think Michael Gallup is going to have a good year. I don't know why. You know me, I'm a Cowboys hater. I'm not a Cowboys fan, but they got to throw the ball to somebody. There's not teams in this NFL that are not going to throw the ball, Brandon. If you throw the ball at least 20 times a game, Michael Gallup's probably going to be good for 3 to 4 catches a game. I don't know why. I'm telling you, I think Gallup is going to be a big focus. This is a guy I'm going to be going after late in my drafts.
Yeah, I'm not
with a lot of potential upside.
That's for sure. Not on board with it at all. Like, the coaching staff's dedication and love for a player like Terrence Williams is going to keep him on the field, as much as I disagree with it, because Terrence Williams shown that he's nothing special. I'm not going to disagree with you. Terrence Williams is not special in any shape or form whatsoever. We found that out over the course of the last 3 to 4 years. But this coaching staff likes what he can do, so that's why they keep trotting him out there. Allen Hurns is the new shiny toy that is going to be a possession role type of receiver. You know, the guy to move the change, hopefully to take over the Dez Bryant role in the offense. Cole Beasley, we did not utilize Cole Beasley last year in the same fashion that we did 2 years ago when this offense was really humming. I expect for Cole Beasley to get back into the mix this year. You know, like what you said, we're throwing the ball 20 to 25 times a game. The most you could expect target-wise for a guy like Gallup, and that's if he's on the field, is going to be 4 to 5 targets a game. And can he catch those passes? Are those catchable throws? Who knows? That's the question mark I have here. Do I like the player? Do I like the player long-term? Yes. Do I like the player this year? I like the player, the value in which we got the player and the player that he could potentially be. Do I like this offense for his skill set? No. It's just an honest answer of what I feel like what his potential could be. Yeah, I just don't – I mean, I don't see him
– I think you're wrong. I'm looking from an outside perspective here. I am not a Cowboys fan whatsoever, and for me to say that I think Gallup – I mean, to me, Gallup has the most potential of any of these receivers on the team. Maybe that's why I like him so much. I mean, I just, you know, maybe I'm getting caught up in the rookie hype here. I don't know, but I look at every receiver on your team, and none to me from the outside are as good as I think Gallup has the potential to be.
He's
so
the best,
whether that be this year or next,
out of all the receivers on this depth chart, I will give you that. But can he get
enough 100%? Can he do it this year? So yeah, so this year. For me, I might go around early and go take him. I'm not going to expect any potential, in terms of when I take this guy as my number five, number six receiver here. Dynasty leagues, I think he's probably one of the top five receivers in this draft from a wide receiver perspective. So, but I think he's probably not going to go till, you know, early round two is, I think, a height of what he's going to go in some of these drafts out there. But certainly for me, somebody to kind of take a look at, you know, later in your drafts, a guy that has some potential out
there. Yeah, I think if he gets 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, I would see that as a victory this year for Michael Gallup. But then you get into year 2 and year 3, I'm easily expecting double that in terms of production with Michael Gallup. So
I'm saying around 700 yards, 60 catches, 5 touchdowns, which would be great numbers from what you just described.
If we have a receiver in this offense that goes for more than 700 yards, I would be utterly shocked. That's just me. I think we spread the ball around way too much to accrue any kind of high yardage total for any receiver that we've got. So, it's like I said, run heavy offense. But going back to the receivers, we did skip over one that was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that is James Washington. They pair him with Mason Rudolph, both Oklahoma State products. So James Washington replaces Martavis Bryant, who was also traded on Friday night to the Oakland Raiders, so immediately steps into that wide receiver 3 role for Pittsburgh. So you seen any kind of value out of James Washington in year 1?
Yeah, I think James Washington's going to be a touch less than somebody like Michael Gallup out there. I think James Washington's going to see the field. They ran some three receiver sets last year. in Pittsburgh. So I think James Washington is a guy that definitely does have some upside for me, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's going to be something to watch for when you get to the point to where Ben actually steps off into the sunset and Mason Rudolph takes over this job, is you might quickly see that rapport show back up again between quarterback and wide receiver, because they were probably the two – that was the most successful duo quarterback-wide receiver in the country this last year. I would not be shocked to see them two, you know, reconnect on things when they get back when it gets back to them playing together on the field at the same time. So,
Speaking of which, real quick, before you go forward, just looking down the Steelers depth chart, Steelers got a pretty famous name out there as a it looks like as a priority free agent, King Griffey Jr.'s son Trey Griffey.
Yeah.
Is a Pittsburgh Steeler there. So yeah, probably he's probably one of these guys that's going to get cut before the before the season starts. But hey, that's at least exciting for some of us 90s kids out there. Trey Griffey.
Yeah, I heard about that like a few weeks back, that they had signed him to like a kind of like a futures deal or something like that, which essentially is kind of like a Major League Baseball invite to a training camp type of a deal. You're going to get a chance to make the roster, but more than likely be a practice squad player. But it is, I mean, that's pretty neat. You know, same thing with like Chris Carter's son, Deron Carter, making it to the NFL and playing, but being an absolute head case and can't stay in the league. So, but now doing things in Canada as well. So, but yeah, no, I agree with you there. It's a pretty wild looking thing there to see a guy that most of us idolized growing up playing baseball. Now his son's playing footballs and then trying to make an NFL team. But moving on, you got to kind of try to roll through this a little bit quicker. You got any other receivers that caught your eye as far as potential landing spots where they landed?
A couple names. I know we briefly touched on Christian Kirk at the Cardinals there. He has potential to be the number two receiver there this year. Traquan Smith to the Saints. I mean, obviously within that offense, I think he's a guy that, you know, could hold some potential this year as well. Deion Cain going to the Colts is another receiver out there that I might take a look at. And I don't know how the hell to say his first name, but the St. Brown kid out of Notre Dame that went to the Packers there. I mean, they have an opening. Honestly, you know, taking a look, I mean, that's, you know, the more I think about it, that could be a spot for Dez Bryant to go and sign a one-year deal. I mean, he turned down a two-year deal for the Ravens because he wants to have a one-year deal. So maybe that's a spot for Dez Bryant to go to the Packers. But, hey, as it stands right now, the St. Brown kid. How do you pronounce his name, B?
I was going to say, like, let me have the crack at that. It is Equanimeous St. Brown is how
that,
you pronounce
it. That looks right.
Yeah,
that
no,
looks
that is,
Equanimeous.
No, that is exactly how you pronounce that name. It's Equanimeous St. Brown. Let's all enunciate and say it together, ladies and gentlemen. Equanimeous St. Brown. But no, I agree with you. That's probably the one guy that I saw come off the board late in day three, especially like the landing spot's perfect. Can he put the work in? I think that's his. That's the knock on Equanimeous St. Brown, is that he does not put the work in. He's kind of an entitled kid, but he has that size speed combination that the Packers are going to really, really want to utilize in this offense. That he can get down the field, he can take the top off of the defensive secondary. I'd hopefully be like that Jordy Nelson replacement. Probably not early on in the season. But he's got some value moving forward. I think if he can get his head on straight and act right, you're looking at a guy that can probably, out of some of these other receivers we've talked about, have some more immediate impact in fantasy football. I mean, he's not gonna outproduce your guys like your DJ Moores and Calvin Ridley's and even the Michael Gallups of the world. But I think you've definitely got some potential moving forward late in the 2018 season for a guy like St. Brown, that's for sure. So I do like that point that you brought his name up as well. So, but as far as Dez Bryant goes, I'm almost set in the fact that Dez Bryant is going to be a New York Giant sometime over the course of the next 2 weeks. I have a feeling that that's going to be made. That move is going to be made quickly.
if you're Dez Bryant, why would you go there? You're not, I mean, you're not going to get as many balls as what Odell Beckham is. You got Sterling Shepard there, and you got an aged quarterback who's just not going to throw the ball a ton over there, especially with Saquon Barkley. Why, if you're Dez Bryant, would you go there? Why would you not go to somebody like the Packers, where you know you're going to be the feature guy on that offense? Hell, go to the Saints. You're going to catch some balls there. You're not going to catch a ton of balls going to the Giants. If you go there as a Dez Bryant hater, I would love, as a Dez Bryant hater, for him to go to the Giants. That would be ridiculous.
He's going to go there, A, just to stick it to Dallas. That's the biggest thing. We've all seen how that relationship had just fell apart during the release. He's going to go there just to stick it to Dallas, but he's going to go there to replace Brandon Marshall. And you know, they're going to want that veteran receiver to put on the outside, put Sterling Shepard back on the inside.
Marshall had a cut of production last year.
Brandon Marshall was hurt for most of the year. That's what I'm going with. But if there's another team that's going to take a crack at him, you know, I brought him up earlier too. I think it's going to be the 49ers. I think that'll be his other landing
spot. That would be a great landing spot. Why would you not go to the Niners? Go to the Niners and have a 1,200-yard, 10-touchdown year with Jimmy Garoppolo throwing the ball to. Why would you go to the Giants? That's ridiculous.
That's my potential landing spot for sure. Makes sense, but like I said, he wants to get after the Dallas Cowboys. He wants to stick it back to them, and that's why I think the Giants situation just seems like a perfect marriage between the two right now. But wide receivers we've covered pretty well. Tight ends, there's some guys out there. Do you want to just kind of throw out the tight end names and we'll cover them real quick? Some guys that you liked?
I'm not a fan of either of the two Ravens guys here. Mike Gesicki, that went to the Dolphins, I think comes right into a starting role with the Dolphins there. Dallas Goedert going to the Eagles, I think is going to step right into that Trey Burton role for them. And then a guy who I think is going to be a little bit of a sleeper here who may hold some value here, but you're looking at potentially Troy Fumagalli, former Wisconsin Badger who going to the Broncos, has a chance to maybe show a couple things this year. So what about you?
I like the Fumagalli point out. Jalen Samuels to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, has some kind of late intrigue as well. I do like Gesicki to the Dolphins. I think he'll probably be the more highly productive tight end out of this class earlier. The Eagles, first of all, let me just point out the fact that the Eagles can bite me.
That they traded up right in front of me.
The Eagles can bite me.
Woo!
That was an absolute just stick it to Dallas. We don't need this position, but we're just going to take him so Dallas doesn't get him selection there.
But they did need the position.
No,
though.
They do.
Selleck is gone. Trey Burton's gone.
How many teams utilize two tight ends successfully? Honestly, with all the receiving options that the Eagles actually have.
The Eagles actually utilized two tight ends last year. Trey Burton had a great year. Selleck had a good year. Ertz had a great year last year. You got to get somebody to play. And they, oh my God, when they did that. Oh, I know. That was hurting you so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't live when that pick was made, but it was, it was ridiculous. I was sitting watching the Avengers Infinity War with my daughter, having an absolute blast watching that great effing movie. And then I get out of the movie and find out that the Eagles not only took a guy that I knew we were targeting, even though if you ask a lot of the insiders for the Cowboys, that said that was not a target of ours, that we were fine with the way that pick was made. Just the fact that they moved ahead of us and made that selection, you bite me, Eagles. That's what I have to say about the Philadelphia Eagles today. You guys suck. I hope you go another 40 years without winning a Super Bowl. That's for sure.
Fly, Eagles, fly.
Yeah. And then on top of that, too, the video that's been out there all weekend long, too, with David Akers throwing shade at the Cowboys at the draft.
You kick
a football for a living, sir. You didn't do shit on the field. Get out of here with that sorry ass bull crap trying to play like you're an actual football player. Nobody wants to hear that crap out of an NFL kicker. Go ask Peyton Manning.
I want to hear
Manning how he feels about an NFL kicker. And he'll tell you.
I want to hear him douse the Cowboys a little bit more with that fire.
Yeah.
But that was
like
great.
Then, like what Nick pointed out to me, too, like Michael Vick had something to say, too, trying to say he never lost to the Cowboys.
Everybody had something to say. It was fabulous. It was must-watch TV if you're a Cowboy hater. It was awesome.
Michael Vick must have forgot while he was in prison that he lost to the Dallas Cowboys in 2006. So you suck it, too, Michael Vick. I'll say that. That's for sure. But anyways... Yeah, that's tight ends. Not a lot of star power coming off the board with the tight ends. I think really the only other guy I would point out would be Jordan Atkins that went to the Texans. He probably steps into a role right away in that offense with C.J. Fedorowicz retiring and then Ryan Griffin being a guy that's just way too inconsistent on the field. You know, I know they have Steven Alexander in that role as well, but they haven't really gotten the production out of him that they hoped that they would have gotten. Atkins might be a guy that has some value late, you know, as early as year one. So he might be a guy to watch on the waiver wires, just depending on how that role shakes out. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, that's really kind of most of the guys that have any type of fantasy relevance at all coming out.
Yeah, because we're not talking kickers. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, we're not talking kickers because some of them did get drafted. The Packers and the Seahawks both drafted a punter in round five.
Because, you know, you can't find a great punter off the waiver wire.
Because one of them got signed to the practice squad for the Carolina Panthers after the draft was over. Trevor Daniel went to the Carolina Panthers. And anyone who follows Tennessee football will tell
you. Did that really happen?
Anyone that follows Tennessee football will tell you this. First and foremost, our favorite linebacker ever to play at the University of Tennessee, Colton Jumper, signed with the New Orleans Saints as an undrafted free agent as well. So, have fun with that, New Orleans Saints. I want to see some camp reports, some practice reports to see what the coaches have to say about their newly acquired linebacker because I think that's going to be priceless info. But anyways. 2018 draft is in the books. I think we kind of covered it pretty steadily after night one, and even now finishing up the discussion on some players to look out for. How are you feeling as we got the draft over with? What are you thinking about there? Anything you're really looking forward to as we get into training camps?
I'm looking for camp to break. We got what? 2-3 months to go, I think, until camp start to break here. I mean, I'm just excited for football. It's going to be a great offseason. I'm telling you, it's going to be a great year for Nick Heffley here in 2018. I'm going to win a lot of leagues, let me tell you. In all seriousness, I'm just ready to start drafting. I'm ready to start putting pen to paper. I'm ready here over the next couple months to start doing some mock drafts, which I think, you know, Brandon and I are going to do a mock draft on here. We've got tight ends to talk about. Is the one position group I don't think we've had a chance to touch on yet. But outside of that, I'm just excited that we're talking fantasy football again. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm the same way for sure. I'm going to be doing a little bit of some post-draft work for rotoexperts.com. I got an article I'm going to put together. Probably going to come out early part of this next week is discussing veterans and their spots in the offense after some of these rookies were brought into the fold. So how are these rookies going to affect certain veteran spots in the rotation? Something that I'm going to be kind of doing some dive-ins on here in the next couple of days. So be on the lookout for that. Where can they find you on Twitter, Nick Heffley?
Hey, at Nick Heffley on Twitter.
Yes, on the Twitter machine, at Nick Heffley. I, of course, at Roto Superstar on Twitter. Like I mentioned, rotoexperts.com as well. This show that you are listening to right now is on ChairShot Radio Network and thechairshot.com, which we always tell you to use your head. And
ow.
Yes, always
use
your
head.
That's what we do with this show. We want you to listen, educate yourself, and win. That's hopefully what we're providing for you with this show. We will be back next week with a little bit more discussion, some fantasy football relevance, some implications. Probably more of a free-flowing show next week. Who knows? We'll talk about it and figure out what we want to do next week. But we will be back in 1 week's time. But until then, we will talk to you guys later, and have a great week.